Joining me on Beyond the Playlist is Jill Kimmel. She is an actress and comedian. Jill, how you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Good. I'm very excited to have you on. I've followed you on Twitter now, I don't know, maybe a year, maybe about the time pandemic hit, found you.
Oh, how exciting.
and you have been a source of moral humor and just humor in general, and a bright spot on my Twitter feed for the whole pandemic.
So nice to say that. I mean, you know, you always wonder when someone goes like, oh, I follow you on social media. Then you, all of a sudden you start to think like, what exactly have they seen that I've written? Like, you try to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Like, you go back through and you go, oh, that might have sounded weird to someone who doesn't really know me. So I'm glad you stuck around. Thanks for sticking around.
Well, it was a combination of that. And also, you have a very well, paginated, put together website that really puts it's a really good representation of what you want people to see when they encounter you on the web. And you did a really good job.
That is so nice of you. I did it myself because I didn't have money years ago. And it was, I liked it because it was easy. I would just like update it from my phone, but then they changed the format where you can only change it from a laptop. So I always forget. So sometimes people are like, you have shows on here from last year. I'm like, oh, I have shows on there. That tells you how outdated the site is. I haven't had shows in a minute.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into acting and comedy and made those choices to kind of end up where you are.
Well, I've always acted. That was something I always loved to do. As a kid, I was always in church plays and all that stuff. But, you know, over the years, you start to realize, like, if you're going to act, you have to be cast in something unless you're creating it. Like if I wrote something and produced it, I could cast myself. But I wasn't interested in that. So I just kind of backed out of it for a little while over the years. I was kind of like, eh. And then my ex-husband actually suggested I try stand-up. And I was like, oh, you're crazy. Like I could never do that. And then I started thinking about it. I thought, oh, that might be fun. And I did. I tried. I got on stage and fell in love with it. And just, God, was that in 2006? Yeah. July of 2006. So it'll be 15 years this July. Wow. Oh my God. I'm old.
What was it about comedy that made you kind of drew you to it? Because to be honest, I mean, I admire comedians because I've done my fair share of stand-up and I've done my fair share of improv. And nothing's more terrifying than we have an improv partner that throws you empty air and you have to figure out how to work with that. And as a comedian, when you're on stage and you tell a joke that doesn't go the way you wanted it to, you get instant feedback and it can be terrifying.
Yes. I think the benefit, like, you know, there's pros and cons. Like if you're doing improv, so you're working with somebody else, you get the benefit of the other person's creativity and their brain. So you can like play off things they say. But you're right. If they throw you something that you're like, then you're kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. So there's that pro and con, but then it's like the reverse for stand-up. So you have to rely strictly on yourself. So that's a con because you're like, you don't have another creative person spitting things out. But the pro of stand-up is that you could always play it off like, yeah, right. So that wasn't the end of the joke. And then like take it somewhere else, you know, like where, so that's the, you know, it's definitely pros and cons of both. But I prefer stand-up for sure because I like the autonomy of it. I like just being up there with a microphone. Like, I mean, I've said before, you know, if the background noise is quiet enough, I could do it without a microphone. It's just you. And that's the real beauty of it. Like if you're an actor, unless you're just doing a one-man play, like some kind of monologue, you need other actors or you need the set or the stage or the script or whatever it is. But with stand-up, there's so much freedom, but also you can script it if you want to. Like mm-hmm. certain comics, like Kevin Pollak, right? Mm-hmm. He's an actor, but he's also a very brilliant stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And I worked with him one time. It was actually my first time ever hosting at the Tempe Improv. And I worked with him, and it's six shows over the course of the weekend. And I watched every show, and every show, his delivery, his words, his timing, everything was exact. Every show. So he memorized what was between like 45 minutes and an hour, this exact perfection it was unbelievable to me that someone could do that. I can't remember like, where are my keys? Like 5 minutes after I put them in my purse. And for him to, everything down to the stop and the take a drink of water and like the raise one eyebrow, it was so well choreographed. It was just incredible. But then you have some people that get up there like an Ian Bag that just riffs on the crowd and every single show is completely different. And they're both beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I love about stand-up, because it can be as scripted or as unscripted as you.
How do you go about writing and preparing for your stage presentation?
You know, I don't.
You're braver than I thought.
Well, you know, I mean, I have my jokes. I have certain jokes that I have that are kind of my standards or ones that, you know, I just, you know, we'll go back to or whatever. It's kind of an outline as opposed to like a script, right? Mm-hmm. So like Kevin Pollak's would be like a script. It's like word for word. This is what he does. This is what he says. This is where he pauses. This is where he, you know, crosses the stage kind of thing. But mine's more like bullet points. And then it's like, you know, I could start at bullet point. I could have 20 bullet points, which are all like jokes or joke premises. And sometimes I don't get past the second one because the audience is having a really good time with whatever I'm talking about. And then I go like, oh, this is fun. And then I just start expanding on it and going deep into it, whatever it is, whether it's like dating or talking about your kids or, you know, and that's so much fun to me. Like
you, I admire it, that, because that means that you have the ability to think quickly and pull references like some kind of wildly spinning Rolodex to be able to access that kind of information. That's incredible.
I mean, yes. I mean, it's not as impressive as you make it sound, but I mean, thank you. But, you know, it's definitely a skill and a talent that not, like everybody's got a talent or a skill that not everyone has. Right. So that's one of mine that I'm kind of quick with that kind of thing. But, you know, it doesn't always go well. Like sometimes it backfires where you're like, okay, so they hated that.
Yeah.
You know, but you listen, it's worth the risk because the payoff is just so incredible.
It's also hard too, because being a comedian that travels outside of where you normally like call home is hard, because then you have to make your jokes universal. I mean, I could tell jokes about living in Utah because I live in Utah and everyone who lives in Utah will think I'm hysterical. I go to Denver and tell jokes about it. They'll still think it's funny because they make fun of Utah all the time. But if I go to like Missouri, I'm going to get crickets.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things, like, you know, what did they say? Know your audience. That's like a main sticking point, kind of, if you will, with anything really, but stand up in particular, because there you are just, you know, you and the audience. And it's like, you really have to know them. So I like to, like, I remember when I was doing some shows in California, like I have a joke about, I don't know, it was like, let's say some little town in Arizona that was known to be like kind of low rent, right? Kind of
surprise,
just
surprise Arizona.
Well, surprise is far from me, but surprise, it's far. So people like to talk about surprise, but surprise is actually pretty decent because it's very up and coming and there's a lot of stuff being built out there. But this is Apache Junction, where even though it probably is starting to get a lot of new places and stuff, in Arizona, Apache Junction is known as like low rent, kind of meth cooking. Like that's what you would talk about, right? So I was like, well, I don't want to do this joke in California because they're not going to know what Apache Junction is. So I asked around a couple of my friends, hey, what's a town that you would consider like a crappy kind of, you know, little low rent? And that's when you find that out. You go, all right. And then you pray. They go, Valencia. You go, all right. And then, you know, you pray that it works. And when it hits with the crowd, you go, all right, they gave me good advice. But
have you ever had a friend? Have you ever had someone lead you down the wrong path with that?
Luckily, not so far. But, you know, you never know, I guess. So, no, luckily, I have not had anyone give me false info when I'm trying to put together my thoughts for a show. So that's good. But if they did, I would probably look around and be like, what? It's Valencia. All right, you guys. Yeah. So I do this joke at home normally.
Yeah.
And I asked a friend of mine to tell me what a crappy town is. And they, is Valencia not? That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Then because the crowd feels like you're friends with them. You're in on it. One of the things that I love most, I guess, about the best feedback I get. I get a lot of feedback, some good, some never usually bad. Usually if people think bad things, they just don't generally tell you, which I'm fine with. It's a little weird for someone to come up and be like, yeah, I didn't really like that portion of your act where you did this. That's kind of like, all right, I don't really need you to do that for me. But, you know, because there's always going to be someone who doesn't care for it. But it's great when people come up and they go, God, I could just, you're so relatable. I can relate to everything you were saying. Like, I love that so much because I want people to feel like we just hung out in the break room at work. Like, yeah, that's what I want people to feel, leave my show feeling like it was 3:45, that boost me up coffee time. They came in, I was in there, and they left with a smile on their face. Like, yep, that's what I want.
And then that's a skill because there's a lots of people who think they, or who can be funny in the workplace or who can be funny in their kitchen at a party or whatever. But being able to translate to the general population is a huge thing. And it's not as easy as people think it is. I mean, I've been funny. I've been unfunny in lots of locations.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why people are always like, oh, my friends always try to tell me I should try stand up. Like people say that so often to comedians. And we're always like, all right, well, knock yourself out. Go do it.
have fun. And
yeah, it's not easy to do, but I mean, it's easy. It's easy for me, just like brain surgery might be easy for a brain surgeon, or you know, accounting and taxes would be easy for a CPA. Like everybody's got something they're good at. So yeah, you have to be good at it for it to be easy. There's nothing that's just easy for everyone. You know, even walking, some people, that's not easy. You know, you have to look at it like that. Like some people aren't able to do it. So I think once people like kind of get their mind, they think like you're just standing up there talking. How hard is it? I make my friends at work laugh all the time.
Yeah.
Well, you might be good at it. I mean, that's why I started. You know, my ex was like, you should do this. And then I was like, no. And I kept telling my friends and they're like, no, you should do that.
It's very funny because I've been married to my wife now for almost 21 years. And she has heard all of my go-to material, like all of it. And it's the material we use when we meet new people. It's the material we use when we're walking through a party. It's the material used just to kind of get people to laugh and move on. And every now and then she'll finish the joke for me midway through. And I will look at her and she will say, you really need to develop some new stuff.
No,
and
I don't.
And I'm like, look, you hear this stuff all the time. The guy at the party who's telling his other friend the joke I just told him, he thinks I'm awesome. So no.
Right. Because I don't need new material because it's a new crowd every time.
Yep.
Like, you know, a real comedian, you know, professional, not just like, you know, your funny person, needs to do new material. Because once you've done touring the country or whatever, and then you're going back to these places, if people really liked you, they want to see you do different stuff.
Yeah. Although it's weird how that's the case that's expected when you go to a club. I memorized Delirious when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, for sure. A lot of people did. And it's funny because I remember one time somebody came to an open mic I was doing and they were doing somebody's material. I forget who it was. And afterward, I said to them, hey, oh, I know who it was. It was Russell Peters. And Russell had this bit. And the funny thing is I had never even seen Russell Peters. But when I was working for the Tempe Improv, we would have like promo videos and it would show just like one or two jokes from like the comedians that were coming up in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the promo videos that was up. So I just remembered that particular joke. So this comedian came to my open mic and did that joke. And I confronted him afterward, not like confronted, but I said to him, hey man, that joke's not yours. You can't do material that's not yours. And he goes, oh, well, he was like, oh, whose joke is it? And I was like, that's Russell Peters' joke. And he's like, oh, well, I mean, I used to listen to his material a lot and I memorized his whole set. So once in a while, I accidentally slipped back into his material. And I was like, first you acted like you didn't know whose it was. Then when I said whose it was, it's like, you can't do that. So as a comedian, you got to keep writing new stuff. But like, it's nice to hang on to the old stuff that works for as long as you can. I mean,
I still can't drink lemonade without thinking of his bad Elvis impersonation, because it's a cool, refreshing drink.
Now, who's bad Elvis impersonation?
It was Eddie Murphy when he did Delirious. He was like, lemonade, that cool, refreshing drink. I can't ever drink lemonade. And I don't think I could do ice cream with an ice cream truck without thinking of Eddie Murphy either.
I can't hear the words, it wasn't me, without thinking about him.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. I saw you. What do you mean it wasn't you? I saw you. It wasn't me. It wasn't you. Yeah.
Yep. It's funny how some of that stuff.
Funny. Yeah. Or umfufu or any of that. Yeah, of course.
Tell me about some of the other projects that your comedy has kind of led you to.
Well, I got to be on Kevin Hart's Heart of the City on Comedy Central a couple years ago. That was 3 years ago. We filmed that. That was really fun. And I thought it was going to be like this big break, you know, but like, no, not so much. You know, you think like, oh, I've got a Comedy Central credit now. Everybody's going to want to book me. Doesn't really work that way, but I, you know, had a really good time doing it. I'm very proud of it. I've got a good piece of tape to send out to bookers when I'm, you know, asking if I could work at their clubs. I got to do the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. That was really great. I produced a comedy festival in Las Vegas, not April of 2020, but April 2019. We did that, called the Double Down Comedy Festival. So yeah, I had a good friend, Cindy, who worked for Zappos for about 15 years. And she said they want to do a comedy festival. And so she hired me to produce it for them. And we did that. And it was really great. We had a lot of really good talent at that. And that was so much fun. And this year we didn't get to do it in 2020 because of COVID. So, you know, COVID just really took over and ruined and changed a lot of things. But I think it'll also be for the good. You know, you start to realize like, oh, we can do shows from home. And some people have seen some of the biggest names in comedy that they never would have gotten a chance to see because, you know, like someone like Bert Kreischer or somebody isn't going to come to necessarily some super small town, but maybe he did one of his buddy's Zoom shows.
Yeah.
And now he's in everybody's living room across the country in these little towns that wouldn't have otherwise get to see him. So there's definitely, it's definitely put a damper on things for sure. Cause like we can't even perform in most places because the clubs aren't open. Like in LA and New York, the comedy clubs are closed.
Yeah.
But in Phoenix, they're actually open.
Wow.
So, and listen, I could be totally safe. I've got shows booked the next few weeks in Phoenix. I'm going to go. I sit in the green room by myself or with just one or two other comedians. You sit back there with a mask on. You get on stage. You have your own microphone. You do your thing. You're at least 12, 15 feet away from the crowd because you're on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
You get off the stage and you go back home, or if you have to stay for the second show, you just sit in the green room and wait.
Yeah.
So it's very safe for comedians.
That's great.
What it's not that safe for necessarily is the crowds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these are people that are willing to take the chance to be out. It's just like sitting at a restaurant. And the clubs have been really good. I mean, they're seating at like 25% capacity. Some of them have got plexiglass up between the tables. Like they're doing everything they can short of completely being closed.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say you could make a joke where you actually put the comedians behind glass and keep them, you know, on display in their natural habitat on the stage.
There are some clubs that tried that in New York, I think, when they were just kind of allowing clubs to kind of do that. They had, or in LA, they're not allowing the clubs to open, but they're doing parking lot shows, or they have some shows that are in a parking lot and they have like a balcony at some building, and the comics are like up on the balcony. People are getting very creative, and that's one thing that's been great about COVID, that people have just really, they stopped relying on like, oh, I'm on the road. I'm a road comic. I'm at a club. These are my dates for the year, and had to really hustle and figure out what else am I good at?
Yeah. I have a friend who was in a Broadway show and it was closed because of COVID. And she just did a drive-in tour, like up and down the West Coast. So she had a stage in front of the drive-in theater screen and they did the drive-in.
A lot of comics are doing that. It's just, you got to do what you got to do, as they say.
Well, before we got started, you mentioned you're working on something. Let's see, what was it? Crank Anchors?
I am doing some production for them, yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved with that.
Well, it's my brother's show. So my younger brother is the showrunner, so he runs it. And I needed work in the time of unemployment. And so he offered me, I'm just doing some production work. I'm not doing any like the talent or whatever, but I'm just doing some production work and that kind of thing, which is nice because it gives me another you know, viewpoint of, you know, I've never really done production stuff before. I'm always just like talent on stage. So it's kind of cool being crew and getting to kind of see the behind the scenes part of what they do.
Tell me a little about how you have coped with COVID, how you have kind of, other than, you know, getting the production job and kind of still doing the comedy club thing. How have you coped with it as a performer?
Not well, to be honest. You know, it's a tough time. Like COVID started in what, like March?
Yeah,
and
March.
I had a residency at a comedy club in Las Vegas that I was doing a show there every other week. And I was making great money doing it and having a lot of fun. I was flying to Vegas every other week and doing my shows. Then I had cruise ships I was working. I would go, I'd be gone for like anywhere from 8 to 10 days doing a cruise. It was like really looking bright for me. And, you know, even once comedy clubs open back up, like everyone's going to be scrambling to get back in. So I'm hoping that my residency gets reconfirmed, but that was supposed to go through July and we ended up, the last show was March 12th.
Wow.
And cruise ships, who knows when they'll come back. So, you know, it's a lot to think about, but, and it's hard not traveling. I'm used to being on a plane in a hotel and I've just been home. And then I came home in like March. And then, over the summer, my boyfriend and I, we lived together. We broke up and he moved out and my kids both went off to college in August. They both went to LA and they live in California and my parents moved full time. And so it has been like, you know, they always say like, oh, life, like you're never more stressed. You go through a marriage or a divorce mm-hmm. or a death or
a job.
I feel
family.
Like I've gone through almost all of it except
yeah.
a death. Thank God. But like, it's one thing upon another. And it's been really, really hard. To even when I do get shows here and there, it's tough to like pull yourself out of that and feel like, okay, got to go be funny now.
It's hard. It would probably be very hard, especially knowing just from this conversation, I have a feeling that you could probably slide into very gallows humor pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, my dog had been very sick for about 10 months and she passed away on a Friday night. I had to go take her and have her put to sleep. And then Saturday I was headlining a show. And I thought, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. And I couldn't talk about anything but on stage. And it turned into like a nice little chunk of like 15-minute material because the crowd related to it. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's had a pet die. Everyone's had to pull themselves up and like jump back into, you know, whether it's caring for your kids or going back to work after a crisis. And so you just kind of have to do it. And if you can't and you're not able to, that's okay too.
Tell me a little bit about your plans for the upcoming year as we start to wrap up.
I don't know. I mean, I'm moving California in about a month. So that's exciting, but I honestly have no plans. I'm, you know, waiting for this vaccine, my turn to get it. And there are no plans because the comedy clubs and live entertainment is pretty much all shuttered for right now.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, you got to kind of look at it like as exciting, like, you know, like, oh, okay, well, paint my own canvas. But unfortunately, you're like not sure if there will be any brushes or paints available. So you're just like, where am, you know, so there really are no plans. Anyone in my industry right now who has plans is very lucky because just straight up stand-ups, we don't have really much. But as soon as I get a vaccine, I will be able to travel around and do the clubs that are open, you know, that will, you know, that will book me that are open, because there are some clubs right now that want me to work, but I don't feel comfortable doing it. So, you know, just getting back into it and traveling around again and being on planes without fear and that kind of stuff. I just can't wait. That's my plan. My plan is to live as much as possible. I'm not sure if I appreciated it last time around, right?
Well, it's very funny because as a podcast host, and as an independent podcast host, the pandemic's actually been pretty good because I've been able to get a hold of and interview people I never thought I would get.
Oh, interesting.
And
yes.
Because they have time on their hands. So
yep, I would imagine that's true. Yeah.
As far as like musicians go, I've been able to interview some pretty impressive people in a certain niche. that I never thought I'd ever get to talk to. And I'm terrified that as soon as the Band-Aid's pulled off this and the world opens back up, I'm going to be out of work because everybody is going to be wanting to be doing everything all the time and I'm never going to talk to another soul.
Yeah, well, you might be right about that. You know, because people will be like over, like you'll always still find people who want to do it and stuff. But yeah, it won't be as, right now it's super easy. Like with Crank Anchors, we're like trying to schedule comics and actors and stuff. And it's like, we're just doing it virtually. And it's so much easier than being like, okay, when are you going to be in LA? When can we set it up? All that.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. Well, where can people find you and follow you and keep up with what you're doing when you start doing again?
I am on Twitter at It's Me, Jill Kimmel. And then I'm also on Instagram at It's Me, Jill Kimmel. And I do have a Facebook page, Jill Kimmel Comedy, but I tend to forget to post there. And then I do have my website, jillkimmel.com. So I actually have it updated right now with my shows. As we were talking, I was like, oh, I should probably update that. So I did do that. Thank you for the reminder. And yeah, it's just a matter of everybody just being patient, giving ourselves a little more time as a country, like just wear the mask. Even if you don't think they work, like I get it if you don't think they work because, you know, we're not scientists, so we don't have the information at our fingertips. We just got to trust scientists. But like, just wear them. Don't give people a hard time when they try to make you wear them. And let's get the vaccines and just like move forward with our life. Like, I mean, there's not much else we can do. The fighting it and like, I'm not going to wear a mask. Don't take away my freedoms. You're like, we're just trying to prevent people from dying here.
Yeah.
Maybe we're wrong, but we're doing our best. Yeah. And you just, you know, cut the crap for a minute.
I know. Roll with the punches, buddy. Just relax.
Yeah. I know.
Find a different hill to die on, please.
Yes. 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 That's exactly right.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your evening and chatting with me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. You were really sweet. It was great talking to you. And, can't wait to listen in to some of your future broadcasts.
For more Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C, you can go to jhammondc.com. You can follow me on Twitter at jhammondc. You can email the show at jhammondc@gmail.com. The theme music is by Magnus Ellegren, featuring Jimmy C and the New York Brass. The cover art is by Phil Rude. You can join the Facebook group for Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C. You can find this and other fine shows streaming at Alpha Geek Radio. If you like what you hear, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a review. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C.